Well, hello there, and thank you for tuning in to Benson Rhodes Live. I do have a special guest today, and it's going to be Dr. Carrie Madi. She is a person who has been a whistleblower for the vaccines, and also a lot of the information has been coming out about vaccines and their danger has been coming from her. Along with that, we have our Sean, and that's Sean McBride. He's an attorney, and it is on his show that he covers many of these issues. So we're going to listen to him, and then, you know, hopefully you guys will have some comments a little bit later. If you want to go over to Benson Rhodes at on my Patreon, patreon.com/Vincent Rhodes. And you can leave any comments there that you'd like to. Well, thank you for listening.
Hey, everyone. It's Arshon with you here. We are live. I have Dr. Carrie Madi joining me as well today. We've got a special event. We're going to be diving deep into forced vaccine laws, what we're seeing with them, what they're doing, and really some of the medical issues behind them, what can happen with them. So we want to get people in the know. And we also then want to talk about really what the issues are. So, Carrie, why don't you say hi and just tell people a little bit about you and your background. I know you're an out practicing doctor, seeing patients. Tell people a little bit about your practice, and then we can jump into some of the questions and raise some familiarity.
Okay, I'm Dr. Carrie Madi, and I'm an internal medicine physician. Went to school in Kansas City University School of Biosciences and Osteopathic College, so it's osteopathic training. Did training in Michigan and Georgia and Florida. I ended up doing my traditional internship and my internal medicine residency in Georgia, an allopathic institution. So I just still have both training, kind of the best of both worlds. And after that, I did private practice, private clinician, and I was served as medical director of two clinics. And I owned my last clinic called Phoenix Medical Group in McDonough, Georgia. Mm-hmm. And then I owned for medical students from college there and did that for 8 years. And then I took a slower pace and came to Dominican Republic to live. Mostly, I still travel back and forth to the U.S. and I do just telemedicine. I still see some patients in Georgia and charity work.
Okay.
So I do now.
So you stay very, very busy with that. So you're out there connected with patients. We're going to talk a little bit about the legal side of it here in a bit. And the fact that, you know, there are many states, and I know it's a surprise. You and I were talking before we got on camera that a lot of people don't realize it, that there are state laws out there that allow people to force a vaccine, and a lot of people respond to that by saying, isn't that unconstitutional? And the answer to that is not necessarily, right? Because there is a U.S. Supreme Court case. I think you talked about that. We saw that in medical school. And so we want people to be aware that there are indeed states out there that have these laws. There's a potential that a COVID vaccine could be forced upon people. And yes. I think one of the things we wanted to talk about tonight too was these vaccines are not, they're not without risk, right? There's always a risk to any medical procedure. So for the, you know, some people that have heard about these forced vaccine laws have said, well, it's just a vaccine. It's not a big deal. Don't worry about it. What would you say to people that are in that camp, Carrie?
Okay, well, let's talk about, I guess, the COVID-19 vaccine that they're proposing and the ones that are currently in trial. Mm-hmm. So these vaccines are very different than what we've had before. They have proposed using new technologies, not just one, but many. So we're not just having one brand new technology, but several. So one of them is that we're going to use modified RNA or modified DNA technology. And there are many sources for that. And if your listeners want to hear, we can list those later, okay?
Yep.
So this is similar to how they produce a genetically modified organism, like your GMO fruit and tomatoes, et cetera. And I think people have already heard about that they're not as healthy as the wild type. Mm-hmm. And so if you extrapolate that to a human, perhaps we wouldn't be as healthy as a normal human, right? These are some things to consider. Also, the mechanism, how they want to administer it, they propose, and I'm not saying that they will, but they propose to use microneedling and electroporation. So electroporation is using a little electrical current. It's very, you can barely feel it, but it's enough to inject the DNA or the RNA or the plasmid into the nucleus of the cell. It's a way of putting that in there. Also with the hydrogel, that would be in these little micro needles as well. So there's a lot of technologies, it's brand new. Let me just say this, it's experimental in humans. We have never used this before in humans. So regardless if you understand what I just said, just know it's an experiment.
And yeah, the one thing, as a outside person looking at this, I keep hearing two things that seem very inconsistent to me. I hear, the CDC, medical experts, government people saying, we've never seen a virus like this. It has very unusual characteristics. It behaves differently than other viruses. And then the other thing I hear is a great deal of confidence of, we are developing a vaccine. We will do a vaccine in a record period of time. We will have it through trials like we've never had before. And, as just a, as a legal professional, just, educated about the world in general, but not a medical professional, it seems to me like those two seem inconsistent. You're dealing with something you've never dealt with before, yet you think you're going to do it in record time. I mean, how do those two become consistent with each other?
I absolutely agree with you. I don't think you have to have a medical degree or science. If something's experimental or something's brand new, shouldn't we learn more about it, research it more before we act on it?
Yeah.
I compare this to the 1976 swine flu epidemic. I don't know if you remember that, but they jumped the gun and they made a vaccine for that. And then within days of the vaccine, 33 people died, and many people had something called Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is a paralysis of your entire body. It's very scary and it can be life-threatening. Sometimes you recover, sometimes you don't. Other things happen from that vaccine. Later they said, maybe that was a mistake. Maybe we rushed it. And they analyzed it. There was a bunch of reports about that later, and they said, yeah, maybe we made a mistake, and then people forgot about it.
Yeah,
this could be another swine flu vaccine. We could have another batch of deaths and Guillain-Barré and all sorts of unknown things because we're using new technologies.
Well, yeah, and I think medically we just we have a history of this, of thinking that a medical procedure is safe or effective. And I'm thinking about different pills, different procedures. This is just, and over-the-counter drugs even, they go out, everybody says everything's okay, you get the approvals, you get the stamps, you start using them, and then 4 or 5 years later, they start saying, oh, well, these people are having adverse side effects. Our history shows us that we do make errors, and we're not always 100% on these things.
Yeah, of course, we have many examples of that, right? All throughout history. Thalidomide and different cardiac drugs. Of course, we could list many of them.
Right.
But something to know, very important for the listeners, is this: is that for a research trial to have safety and efficacy, we have to go through many phases. Mm-hmm. Okay. And admittedly, many of the companies are admitting they are skipping the first phase of animal trials. We don't need that. We go straight to humans. We're already stopping the true safety of this thing.
Right.
So then the second phase, we have some small numbers. Well, they're only reporting 45 patients or 35 patients, 30 patients. This is a crazy small number of patients. Mm-hmm. And then if you look at how they're picking out the subjects, they're very healthy people. They have no comorbidities. They're very young. They're very fit. They don't have any sort of family history of anything. So they're not going to be the person that's at risk for getting sick. Usually these are sicker people. So we don't know the effects on a sicker person. So we have it at, it's not a true look, evaluation of the society. So they're giving them that. And then in the preliminary studies, they're saying that 80% in a low dose have systemic side effects. And then 100% have systemic side effects in the high dose. Wow, a normal study, we would have stopped it already and probably tracked it. Why are we going, then they're going forward on that?
Yeah, there's a lot of concern. Of course, you look at the economic side of it is, they want this vaccine and, they're running the parallel development. They're actually producing the vaccine for potential distribution while they're still testing it. And I understand that from a delivery timeline, but it really makes you wonder about, you know, where the incentives end up. Once you have all this money invested and you have all these doses of vaccine, what are you going to do with them?
Of course, you know, the CDC itself makes money off of vaccines. I didn't know this when I first came out of my training. I just thought it was an independent, or it was a non-biased government entity, and it was in our best interest. But when you start to look at it, it owns its own patents on vaccines. It stands to gain money for all the vaccines that it sells. It's in the billions of dollars every year. Wow, well, we should be really take pause and look. This is a biased entity telling us what to do. So yeah, there's a lot of monetary interest.
Yeah, so that becomes a real issue about it. So there's definitely a risk with it that we've kind of developed a little bit. People are asking about kind of the new technology side of it. And I know there's been a lot of articles and a lot of controversy about the fact that, you know, it potentially being an RNA vaccine, you know, means that it's just really different than the other vaccines that have been used in the past.
Yeah, I mean, the main thing to know is it is an experiment on us. Okay, the experiment will not be finished. We won't know the results before they release the vaccine on us. So the Department of Defense is actually in charge of launching this vaccine project on the United States public. The Department of Defense, okay, that's something important to know.
Right.
It's called Project Warp Speed. It's a very interesting name, right?
Yes.
So they wanted to launch it by January of 2021. But if you look at the research projects that they're doing by the CDC, done, completed study, sorry, until October of 2022. That means they're releasing the vaccine before the study is completed. We are the research lab. We're like the lab rats.
Right. And it leaves open a question. I think that's a good transition to kind of moving a little more to the ethical side of this, right? Is, you know, the normal timelines have all been compressed, you know, and like you say, you took away the animal trials, you're skipping phases, you're moving phases through and forcing it to production with a timeline that's already determined. And so that raises the question of, you know, who's watching out for the people that are going to get this vaccine, right? We normally think that these procedures are built to make sure that the vaccines are safe. But right now, there seems to be so much attention on getting the vaccine out that, you know, who is the watch guard? Who makes sure that people are protected?
That's a good question. And I started to look at some of the laws, and we talked a little bit about this, and I was shocked. I didn't know. Yeah. Right. The American Medical Association, the Journal of Ethics, was stating that the states have the right to use police power to make you have a vaccine if they think it's in the best interest, but they don't have to have proof that it works.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess let's pause for that for some of the viewers. I mean, some of the viewers here may have seen, we did a long video with three lawyers and some question and answers from the audience where we looked at state vaccine, forced vaccine laws. But, you know, to do the quick summary version of it for those that are tuning in today, just so you get a context is, you know, many states already have put a law on their books saying that in the event of an emergency public health crisis, they can force people in the state to take the vaccine. And you would think a lot of people's, you know, gut reaction is that must be unconstitutional, that must be illegal. And there's a U.S. Supreme Court case from 1905 where they said basically if your state legislature okays it, and they look at, they say the vaccine has a risk, but then it has a societal benefit of eradicating disease. If your state legislature says okay, then you're okay to take the vaccine. The U.S. Supreme Court has kind of given it the stamp of approval. And there are arguments that may or may not work in the future. But, you know, these laws are on the books. A number of states, Florida, Georgia, Maryland, Virginia, Arizona, you know, a lot of them have put the laws on the books talking about when these vaccines can be forced. And it's usually an emergency and some government official decides it's necessary. And then the medical community has, you know, basically just looked to the legal guidance, right? They said, well, the law says that, that's what's on the books. So that must be what we have to do. And so, yeah, so, and that background's just sitting there underneath of it all. And I think it becomes a tough question. And the ethical question is just because a law is on the books doesn't necessarily mean it's constitutional. And it also doesn't mean it's ethical, right? It just means that somebody passed a law. And sometimes we look backwards and we say, wow, how did we do that? You know, and that's where some of our legal developments come from. So, you know, as a practicing doctor, Carrie, you know, what do you think about the idea of having, you know, the state have people, you know, walking into your office saying, hey, you know, the state's telling me to get a vaccine. I need to get a vaccine. I mean, where does that put you as a doctor?
I take my oath as a physician very seriously. First, do no harm. And I take it very seriously in that I need to have all, at least as much information as possible, that the benefits will outweigh the risks, okay? And so far, if I don't have a research study, a very good one, at least one, to show me that this is more likely to benefit than harm the patient, and we will not have that study before mm-hmm. they want to launch the vaccine, how can I ethically and morally do that? That goes against my oath as a doctor. I cannot do that as a doctor. I mean, you're asking me to do something that goes against my ethics. I have a problem with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a real issue, right? Because now you're asking doctors essentially to, like you say, you know, my fundamental understanding of the, you know, doctor-patient relationship should be that the patient comes in, the doctor understands the patient's situation, and then there's just some discussion of risks and benefits of whatever.
Privacy and HIPAA laws should apply, shouldn't they?
Right. And, you know, if I'm coming into the doctor, I'm saying, hey, these are the symptoms I have. This is what I have. Run whatever tests. And then whatever tests come out, whether it's medicine, a procedure, whatever, it's going to have risks, right? The doctor's going to say, hey, you know, this is the procedure. This is the pill I recommend, whatever. This is the side effects. You know, what do you want to do? I mean, that's the discussion we expect to have rather than have, a court or a governor say, hey, go get your vaccine.
And how can I tell a patient, well, the research hasn't been finished yet. I don't know about all the risks.
Right.
What kind of answer is that, right? So yeah. We don't know if it's going to work. If it's not going to work, why are we forcing something like that? Think about just common sense. And this is the other thing to bring up is the liability part of the manufacturers. They have zero liability.
Yes, the 1986 Act is out there and the PrEP Act. We have two different major laws in play with vaccines. And
refresh my memory about the February 2020 Act, the PrEP Act that you.
Yeah, the PrEP Act basically says, you know, in an emergency situation, when you're preparing for a situation where you have public health emergency, that the federal government essentially has the ability to relax liability. So if you're connected with an emergency and, you know, the government officials sign off on it, you remove liability for things that are done in response to the emergency. So that can take a lot of liability away.
Yeah, that means if they kill people or if they maim people, harm people, it's not their problem, not their fault. What are you going to do? I mean,
exactly.
What if you have a lifelong disability because of this? Well, too bad for you. I mean, this is unbelievable. So why would, you know, it's like a car manufacturer. If they had a faulty car that had, you know, like the Firestone tires were faulty, we recalled those cars. We're not going to put them out anymore. There was a consequence to the manufacturer, right? Because of lawsuits. Well, if we take away that consequence, I bet you that manufacturer would continue to put out the same cars. They don't want to lose their inventory, right?
Yes.
It makes sense. The same thing with the vaccine manufacturer. I don't see it as any different.
No, and I've talked about that. You know, we kind of have a confluence of things coming together, right? We have a rushed vaccine with federal dollars buying it because there's already been announcements that the federal government's essentially going to pay for this vaccine. It'll be free to the, you know, recipient. So we have a federal buy. We have a rushed vaccine. We have a state mandate potentially, at least in some states, that may be acted upon. And then on the backside of it is the drug manufacturer has no liability. So from a drug manufacturer standpoint, you know, looking at it purely economically, it's like just get something approved and get it into people because I don't have to worry whether it turns out good or bad. I made my profit.
Yeah. And Bill Gates even was on one of his interviews stating that, you know, we're going to have to take a lot of bad with the good, he said. For the good of the whole, there's going to be a lot more deaths and a lot more side effects. He said up to 700,000 either really bad injuries or deaths would occur from the vaccine itself.
Yeah.
Just alone.
Yeah, you know, and that's one thing I've heard from people just in the community. And I'd love to get just a doctor's perspective of it. I know this won't be the opinion of every doctor, but you know, a lot of people have said, okay, you know, some people are going to get injured and hurt by the vaccine, but, you know, maybe some people will be saved because there'll be more immunity in the community. So they're like, I'm okay with the forced vaccine. You know, we'll just let the chips fall where they will. Some people will die that wouldn't have died. Maybe some other people that would have died get saved. I mean, how does that strike you as a doctor, you know, making those kind of choices?
We simply don't have any proof yet. Okay, give me some proof, right?
Right.
we're working with nothing right now. And so how can you go ahead saying we're forcing something with zero proof right now? I mean, yeah. Come on, guys. This is January 2021 is just around the corner. So yeah. We need to start asking a lot of questions. And, you know, standing up for ourselves and coming together and being united voices together. And, you know, the censorship that's going on right now. I mean, you know,
yeah.
Trying to get this information out to the public, it's not on the mass media. It's very rarely heard,
yes.
You know, and people have to search for it. That's ridiculous. I mean, and also, how can you explain this to me? Because I don't understand. How can they do the kind of the mandated vaccine where they would say, okay, we're not really forcing it on you, but if you don't get it, you can't leave your house pretty much. You can't go to work. You can't go to school. You can't go to travel. Yeah. How is that legal?
Well, there's different layers of it, right? So, yes. And so we have, I mean, government and largely the states have a lot of, as you've talked about, the AMA recognizes a lot of police power. So as a state government, generally, you get to provide for the health and safety of the people in your state. That's how a lot of these states have passed these forced vaccine laws on the theory that, hey, you know, if people in the state might get injured, then we can go out and we can make everybody take a vaccine because we'll be saving the people that might be injured by the virus. That's the theory. And U.S. Supreme Court recognized that in Jacobson. Somebody, you know, one of the viewers did comment a minute ago, and I wanted to address it, that, you know, Jacobson was only a fine. And yes, it was, but Jacobson embodied the theory that, you know, the government can force a vaccine, and the penalty in Jacobson was a fine, but we, you know, there's a lot of lawyers that think going all the way through with a forced vaccine would be okay. We have Buck versus Bell from 1926. If you think that you can't go that far, which allowed forced sterilizations. And there's an NPR report from a couple years ago stating that 70,000 people have been forced sterilized under Buck versus Bell. So if you can force sterilize people, you can probably force them to take a vaccine. So to the extent that you think that there's protection from, you know, getting an actual needle jab versus a $5 fine in the case of Jacobson, U.S. Supreme Court has allowed states to sterilize people in their care. So but it's all under police protection, right? The state's supposed to be empowered to think about what's right for their people. So that kind of gives them the ability to do the forced vaccine. Some states, Pennsylvania, very interesting, their state health book looks back to the power of the King of England to look over his, you know, peasants who were the children. And based on that theory, perhaps the state of Pennsylvania can force people to take a vaccine. So that's your underlying theory. And then within this broad power for safety, I think a lot of states, there's been talk about, you know, tying licenses, tying the ability to go shopping, to wearing a mask now, eventually a vaccine. But really just under this general state authority, that's where they're going to get the ability to potentially either actually say you need to get the needle jab or make your life very restricted if you don't get the vaccine.
And I don't know if you saw the talk between Alan Dershowitz and Robert Kennedy Jr.
I saw a good part of it. Yes.
I just saw, you know, I didn't see the whole thing, but part of it, but Alan Dershowitz, how he was so emphatic and passionate about, and what he said, we have the right to grab you, stab a needle or jab a needle into you. Though I think the pretty much his words,
right?
Against your will. And he seemed to blink an eye. I'm like, what?
Yeah, I mean, Dershowitz is a very well established constitutional expert. You know, he's argued many, many leading cases, you know, and there he is, right? And he is adamant that this is a state right, and he has no problem with it, no qualm with it. So, you know, there are definitely out there, and if you read the legal journals, there are lots of lawyers writing that they think the Supreme Court would continue to allow these forced vaccines. So it's all under that state power to provide for its safety. Somebody did ask in our comments here, how do we get the law changed? Well, the Supreme Court, at least, you know, based on the current reading of Jacobson, has left the power in your state legislature. So if you don't want your state forcing you to get a vaccine, you need to go there and get to your state legislature. And if you have a law, get it removed. And if you don't have a law, get a protective law passed, right? That's your first battleground. If I had to pick the place that was most protective and was most likely to protect you, I would say go to your state legislature and get the law changed or get it updated.
You know, something that I always kind of fell back on and I remembered that kind of trumped federal law was international law. Mm-hmm. And that included the Nuremberg Code.
Yes.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, Nuremberg Code is out there. And Nuremberg Code is an interesting law that came along. It was developed after World War II. And they were having trials for a lot of the, Nazi personnel who had participated in the concentration camps and medical experiments, et cetera. And they really didn't, they were really trying to figure out what to do. And the court, the Nuremberg court that was trying the cases, came out with these principles of having the Nuremberg Code and essentially said there are these fundamental things of human rights that we just recognize, including one of those to say that, you know, as part of this Nuremberg Code, you can't experiment on people without their consent.
And the world. I'm so excited on that.
Yeah, and I think one of the issues, I guess, Carrie, and maybe we can get your doctor's point of view on this, is, you know, the Nuremberg Codes, a lot of people say the Nuremberg Code says you can't have forced vaccines, and I don't read it that way. It says you can't have medical experimentation without consent. So can you talk about, you know, the experimentation side of it? I mean, from, you know, thinking
that
about from
actually medical does side,
go ahead.
Yes. Well, that actually ties into what I said a little earlier. And that this COVID-19 vaccine, if it's launched at the time it wants to be launched, they want to launch it, we would be literally in the middle of an experiment, okay? Because the final studies would not be out yet. So technically, we would all be experimental subjects. So I think we do fall under that Nuremberg Code because we are technically all experimental subjects. So we should have the right to say yes or no to being an experiment.
Yeah. And I mean, it brings up an informed consent issue, right? Which is, I think, you know, one thing that I've been talking about a lot, and I know the country's, you know, very divided on the mask mandate, but to use that as an analogy, you know, there's been people saying masks are dangerous, they're being used in ways they weren't intended. I mean, all the way up to the U.S. Surgeon General, you know, had very strong statements back in March about the dangers of masks. And, you know, I understand the public health potential need, but I mean, how do you, as a medical professional, and I'm not saying you, Carrie, but just generally from the profession standpoint, how do you tell somebody to do something with a risk with it without explaining that risk to them?
You mean wearing a mask?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't make sense to me scientifically, because the mask that we are telling people to use, they're used in a clinical setting and they're only meant to be used for a short time. We take them off like in like 5 to 10, 15 minutes and throw them away and then get another one or get new gloves. We don't wear the same ones because we know that they gather germs so easily. We would never want to wear them more than 5 to 10 to 15 minutes. They were only used for these kinds of controlled environments, right? So they were never meant to be used outside. And it was only if that person was actively sick also. So only in a sterile environment like an operating room, or someone was actively sick and you just didn't want to get the respiratory droplets out there.
Yeah.
But it wasn't for asymptomatic people walking around.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of data to support that. And by the way, I don't know if you saw that there's a new mandate in Washington, D.C., where the lawmakers and politicians don't have to, or government employees, sorry, they don't have to wear masks.
Yes, I saw that, you know, that it really does. It really makes you question. Yeah, I mean, we had that here in Orange County, Florida, too. Some people found that as well. Same kind of exemption. And then Washington, D.C., they said that people that were lawmakers or government employees wouldn't have to wear it when they were working. And it really does make you wonder about these laws, right? I mean, why is a government employee not going to be spreading the virus any differently than anybody else?
I have to laugh at that.
Yeah. And so that sits out there.
You know, Fauci, Dr. Fauci, he was caught without wearing his mask during that baseball game he attended, right?
Yes. Yeah, we saw and it was funny, a lot of people raised the issue with, you know, Fauci is, you know, he had the mask on when he threw the pitch out and nobody was nearby. And then when he's sitting in the stands with people sitting next to him, he drops his mask down. It does make you wonder, you know. And Fauci's one
that's gone down. Yeah, common sense and science.
And I've read the CDC guidelines and I've talked about it, you know, in our Facebook group. I have a Facebook group called the American Freedom Information Center, where we just talk about a lot of things like this, right? So if people haven't seen it yet, go check it out. And I did a post a couple of days ago. And the CDC guidelines, if you read the CDC guidelines on how to wear your mask, it tells you to wash your hands, install your mask, don't touch your face, you know, wear your mask. Then, you know, when you're done, you know, remove your mask, wash your hands, put your mask in for washing, don't touch it again. And that's not what we see in reality, you know. And I talked earlier today with a surgeon, had a long conversation with him on this and other issues, but he went into great detail about how they put their masks on in a medical setting. Can you explain to me just kind of what is the procedure if you don't want to get germs, including coronavirus, other illnesses, et cetera, onto your mask? I mean, what would that process look like in a doctor's office that was doing it correctly?
It depends on what kind of environment that you're in. If it's a completely sterile environment, like an operating room, or if you're just seeing patients, you put it on outside the room of where the potential infection could be. Okay. Yeah. So if it's a sick patient in a room, all the personal protective devices would be outside of.
Yep.
So you have to put a glove up and then you put, you know, you scrub down your hands, I'm sorry, very well. Yep. And then you put on the gloves, you know, the mask. And then immediately before you leave the room, you wash everything because you don't want to spread it around. So here people are going, you know, walking around with them, touching everything, and then reusing it over and over and over again. These are walking germ factories. I mean, now they're making pathogenic mold and pathogenic probably bacteria. If you looked at under the microscope, they're actually terrible. You should, I mean, I look at it, I'm like, ew, so it's,
yeah,
it's,
I mean,
toxic.
I mean, the CDC guidelines, I mean, you know, the surgeon told me, you know, and I guess he was talking about a surgical setting, but he said essentially he would scrub, he would install his mask, and then he would have people come assist him to put on his gloves, right? I mean, like a whole process to make sure that he's not infecting this mask, right? And if at any point during the surgery something splashes or whatever, then he's got to, you know, remove the mask and start.
Actually, touch the mask, you must remove, go back out of the room, and then do the whole procedure all over, even if you actually just touch the mask.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, very, very, you know, so that's what these masks are designed. And if you're going to follow the CDC guidelines as a layperson, you need running water. You got to wash your hands before you put it on. You got to wash your hands when you take it off, which means people are wearing it out into the environment. Like you say, then they're going to start getting it, turning into a germ factory.
I mean, washing your hands with soap and water is the most important thing. I don't know how many people are doing that.
Well, there you go. if there have been a number of people that said if everybody just washed their hands, we would have.
The most important thing, yeah.
Yeah. So the point is, anything medical, mask, forced vaccine, whatever it is, has a risk to it. And I think we've kind of really talked about tonight the fact that there is a risk. And, you know, we as lawyers believe that the Supreme Court should be, you know, if they had to review this again, they should go back and double down on their analysis in Jacobson and add the concept that they've added in more modern cases, which is looking at that legislative review and making sure they're understanding that risk. But, you know, and we as citizens need to ask our state legislatures, are they considering the risks to us? Did they consider the risks with the masks? And now are they going to consider the risk with the mask, the vaccine? And I think I'll take your medical opinion on it, Dr. Carey, but from, you know, my lay opinion, I think a vaccine is probably a lot more dangerous than wearing a mask.
Absolutely, especially an experimental one using brand new technology on us. And I would not take the vaccine right now. I'm telling you that because I need data. I'm a scientist at heart. I want to see the data. I don't see it. I don't see the safety behind it. And I also, you know, think we need to look at this as a human rights issue, because if we're in the middle of a true experiment, which we are, technically we are, Yep. And you're trying to give this vaccine in the middle of an experiment. We are test subjects. We should have human rights and have a right to say no. We have consent.
Yeah, and we know the people that are in the trial, you know, they've consented, and I understand that. So they've hopefully been informed of the risks. They know they're taking an experimental vaccine. I understand a number of them are actually getting cash payments for taking this trial.
Up to $1,600 in Africa, I think.
Okay, yeah. Somebody told me here in Florida, one of the people are getting $700 or $1,000. So,
really?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, somebody had read me an excerpt of a trial here in Florida, and the payment was $700 to $1,000 for, you know, being the experimental subject. So it does, and I understand, you know, it's inconvenient to be a subject of one of these tests. You have to go in for your needle jab. You probably have to go in for follow-ups, but it really makes you wonder about the number of dollars behind this, right? When you're talking about 30,000 test subjects, $1,000 each, that's a big chunk of change there. And then you've got this vaccine out being mass produced right now in simultaneous with the trials. RFK Jr. in that interview you mentioned with Alan Dershowitz, he talked about this vaccine being too big to fail at some point, right? There's so much money behind it. There's so many medical reputations behind it that it becomes very hard for somebody to pull the plug.
There's a Department of Defense behind it. We have some big names that you mentioned before that have a lot of patents and interest in this. Tech giants that are behind this. The list goes on and on. These big pharmaceutical companies that actually get taxpayer money for research and development. They don't even have research and development working people, right? And donations from Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Gavi Vaccine Foundation. Yeah, they're getting lots of money already.
Yeah, so it's big dollars, and you know, it's a risk. And I think we have to acknowledge that, you know, we are, you know, I think, you know, there's a lot of people that over rely on science, right? I mean, science is great. Science has extended lives, it's done a lot, but there's limitations on what we do. Could you talk about maybe some of the struggles with other vaccines? I mean, we've never come up with a vaccine for AIDS, right? We have other diseases out there that we've never really had great success with a vaccine. So can you talk about maybe just some of the facts that there's just some things medical science have been unable to deal with in the past?
Well, how about the flu vaccine? Yeah. I mean, we still get hundreds of thousands of flu cases. Not right. And by on a mission, you're only picking a few strains, and there's so many strains out there. So to me, it's kind of a failed vaccine, right? You didn't prevent the flu from happening. It still happens just as it does always.
Yeah.
So I mean, technically, and look at the insert of a flu vaccine. It says this has never been proven to protect you from the flu.
Right.
That's what it says.
Well, how many people have actually got to see the inserts, right? I mean, I think that's a big thing.
No, never. I gave my patients the inserts. I wanted them to read. And then if they agreed with what that was in their body, okay.
Yeah.
But
right. Yeah, I think a lot of doctor's offices omit that step. They don't stop and give that to you. We've covered a lot of territory today, Dr. Carey. You know, everybody's tuned in. We're glad there. We're going to be responding to your comments. So we've responded to some while we could. Feel free to keep commenting away. Let us know what questions you have, what you might want to cover us in the future, because I'll beg Dr. Carey to come back on the show again as this develops and we'll learn more. But you had a wonderful video, which is how I kind of started the process of you and I getting to know each other. Why don't you tell people where they can learn more about you and, you know, the efforts you're making so they can learn more, because it's all about education.
Yeah. Well, you know, of course, as a doctor, you want to know about what's going on with this pandemic. And I kind of equated it to the previous, the SARS and the swine flu recently, where they really said, oh, this is going to be a big pandemic, but it turned out to be okay. It wasn't that big. So I'm like, this will be the same way. Well, then all of a sudden, of course, as we all know, it wasn't the same thing, right?
Yep.
So I need to learn about this more. So I tried to study the organism or what the data was in the organism, and I had a hard time really finding hard data. I'm like, this is strange. And then, you know, as time goes on, I'm trying to figure out the mechanism of action, what's going on. And then all of a sudden, the word vaccine came out almost immediately when the lockdown happened, like right in March or earlier. And I'm like, that's strange. Why would they say that right away? Let's look into it. So when I started to look into it, like, wow, I was shocked. I was looking at these brand new technologies and everything was blowing my mind away at how they were going so quickly. And this is going against all of, to me, our medical ethics and true science. I was looking at where's the real science behind this? This is very worrisome. So in a nutshell, you know, to make a long story short, I woke up in the middle of the night going, I have to talk. I have to say something. I can't keep this going on. We all need to learn about this and know about this. And then I also was teaching myself about a little bit of the law, you know, like you said, about those mandates. And I was surprised I didn't know about those. And that was more incentive. So I just did a video one day impromptu and it kind of went viral.
Wonderful.
Didn't expect that. And I did a follow-up video. So some people like that information. I'll still provide information as I find it.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you're spreading the word. And, you know, we as lawyers, we've, you know, so people know the history to the extent you haven't seen it. We in March, you know, I'm in a county called Volusia County, Florida, which includes Daytona Beach and a few other areas. We saw a court order saying the courts were shut down, but we will open for mandatory vaccine hearings. And we just thought that that was very odd that this court order came out in March. Recognizing that the courts would potentially open to hear about mandatory vaccine. Wow. And we were like, what about this? And then state of Florida later started publishing a form for travelers from out of state and was having them sign. And in no uncertain terms, at the bottom of that form, it says, we have the ability to force vaccinate you. And so, and they're asking people to sign that as they travel into Florida. And folks, if you haven't seen that, there's more on that. Yeah, it's out there. We talked about the Florida law and the Florida form in great detail on another video here on the McBride Attorneys Law Show YouTube channel. So folks, you can go Google that out and learn a ton about that. And a lot of other states have those forced vaccine laws. And we think it's just very unfortunate that a lot of citizens are living in cities and states that have forced vaccine laws, but haven't even been informed, right? I mean, if these laws are on the books, shouldn't our government be giving us pamphlets and informing us and telling us that we're subject to these laws?
You know, I don't think they're being transparent with us. Why is that? If they're so sure this is for the good of the public and the good of the whole, why aren't they being transparent? Why aren't we seeing more of the data? Why aren't we being told more about these research studies? What and why about the laws? If there's nothing to hide, it makes me wonder.
That's the question. That's the question a lot of us are asking is why. I mean, we're supposed to be a democratic government, right? We're supposed to inform. We're supposed to be the citizens. We're supposed to be informed. We're supposed to elect our representatives. They're supposed to protect our interests. And when we don't have information, when we don't have knowledge as citizens, it really counteracts the whole process.
Yeah, we're trusting them to do what's right for us in our best interest, right? And right now, I don't know. I just don't feel like that's everything's going in our best interest. And I mean, now it's in a higher level. It's human rights now. It trumps everything to me. We need to now speak up for ourselves and look more into that Nuremberg Code. I think
we're started some research on it. The legal team, we are working on a paper just so those of you that are following along, keep in touch with us. We do have a Facebook group called American Freedom Information Center that's around for as long as Facebook will allow us to keep a group. And, you know, we have a YouTube channel, but get on our email list because we are sending out regular emails. But we want to get people informed. We're working on a paper to talk about these state forced vaccine laws. We want to go in deeper into Nuremberg Code. And we think there's a moral argument. The lawyers that have coalesced around this, you know, it's not proper to shift a risk to somebody involuntarily. We understand the theory of a vaccine, the theory of lowering community spread, but that's not something you do by forcing somebody to take a medical risk.
I agree. Without proof that it will work, you know?
Exactly.
I do have a lot of people that are in a group that share information called Serendipities Group, and they have requested recently, they're ready for action. They want to help. They want to do something about this. So I think there's a lot of listeners out there and some people that are in my group that maybe we can find.
Would love to talk. You know, one big thing we've been asking for as this movement has developed on the lawyer's end is spread awareness. And maybe Carrie and I can get together. We can give you some more details on what to do. But, you know, share this video, tell your friends, you know, go knock on your neighbor's door and say, hey, did you know that there are forced vaccine laws out there? Did you know that this risky vaccine is going to be developed and experimentation is not going to be over until October 2022? You know, just let other people know.
And the law. We need to know the law. I think that's very important.
We need to know. Yeah, we need to know what the law is, and we need to know what's going on in the medical study. We as citizens deserve to know these things. And so people are asking me to put a link to your group, so we'll make sure we get that in the comments. We'll do a whole post over at the American Freedom Information Center on Facebook so that more people can get involved in growth groups. So if you're not a member, come over there, and I'll do a whole post about Dr. Carrie and her group. But we'll be bringing these efforts together to get more people in the know. Starts with knowledge. And then if enough people have knowledge and, you know, you and your neighbors don't like these laws and you're not happy with what's happening, I would say your next step is to go talk to your government officials and say, let's change this. We don't like how this is working. You know, that's how it starts. It's going to start as a grassroots effort to really build it the right way.
Good. Yeah, I'm excited to start doing something about this instead of just talking about it.
Yes. So, well, I am so glad you did the video tonight. I know we're getting a lot of thank yous from the audience. I want to personally thank you for helping spread the information, Carrie. Really, really appreciate it. Looking forward to doing more. Folks, looking forward to your comments, talking to you, seeing you on future videos. Reach out to us. Let us know what you're seeing, what information you have, and how we can help you be local advocates. And we'll be back again with you soon. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Tom. This is great. So, bye.